TV radio personality in Chicago, David Haw, will join us. And he will join us in 20 minutes from now to react to all the latest at Northwestern. But first up, let's update you on some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. We call this segment the News Brief.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
So Randy Arozarena wins the home run derby last night. Vladimir Guerrero won the home run derby last night. Let's hear Vladimir Guerrero say he's honored to win the derby.
But I feel very, very happy about that, very proud. And I always say, I really believe that when you work very hard, it pays off.
And that was through an interpreter. Vladimir Guerrero says he was more tired this year in the derby than he was 4 years ago.
In 19, I was younger. So, I mean, I swung harder. I didn't get tired that often. But now I'm older now, so, you know, I couldn't swing as hard as I want. And I got tired real quick, too.
Julio Rodriguez is stunned to learn that he set the record for the most home runs in a single round in the home run derby.
Hey, Julio, when did you find out that you set a record in the first round?
Did I?
That right now is now when you're finding out?
Yeah.
How do you feel? You set a record for the most home runs in a single round in the derby.
That's pretty good. I'll take it.
It's kind of crazy, EJ. It's almost as the equivalence of when, in the first round of a dunk contest, someone puts up a perfect score, and then in the other round, the other guy was like way off, but then ultimately, throughout the dunk contest, the other person just ends up being the better dunker.
Yeah, it's happened, I think, a couple times in dunk contests where like there was a guy who clearly in the first rounds did really well, but then didn't finish strong. It's maybe not the best example, but, you know, Aaron Gordon, the year where he lost to Zach LaVine,
yeah.
It felt like he came out much hotter than LaVine, and then perhaps LaVine maybe outlasted him, though I think he got robbed. But, yeah, that's essentially what happens in this derby. Like, Guerrero essentially was the Julio Rodriguez from 4 years ago. Like, he came out like a gangbusters, but then he got outlasted by Pete Alonso by the time he got to the final round. And here, basically, you had the same thing with this, where Guerrero may start off a little slow, but it's about just winning your individual rounds. And he won his individual round every time. He ended up winning.
Yeah, remember when D-Wade messed up the scoring?
Oh, God, D-Wade. I think that was the second time that Gordon got screwed, because he got screwed first time again with LaVine in Toronto, and then the second time he jumped over Taco Fall, who's 7'7", and Dwayne Wade wanted to help his boy. I forgot who was on his team. One of the guys that was on the Heat, and that guy ended up winning unnecessarily. It was ridiculous.
Can I give a Britney Spears reference? I guess I can now these days, yeah. In the year 2023.
I mean, everybody knows Britney now, between Victor Wembanyama and the whole conservatorship. Yeah.
Basically, Dwayne Wade was like, oops, I did it again. Ba-dum-bum. Shohei Ohtani says the drive to win gets even stronger every year via an interpreter.
Yeah, those feelings get stronger year by year. It sucks to lose. He wants to win, so yeah, it gets stronger every year.
So you hear that, and isn't the easy thought right away to assume, EJ, oh, well, if you want to win, you got to leave the Angels, right?
Right.
The thing is, though, just because someone says that yesterday on July 10th, I don't know if that necessarily means that Shohei Ohtani's going to leave the Angels.
Yeah, that like soundbite doesn't move me to think that he's definitely going to leave. It just says that he wants to win. I mean, I know, I guess because of the free agency that's looming, people read into it, but like, yeah, he wants to win more and more every year. Like, that's every athlete. That doesn't mean that the athlete is looking to leave the team he's at.
And also, even though the Angels have given you no reason to think that they're anywhere close to actually winning, you never know what he actually thinks in terms of the personal life, living where he is right now,
right,
liking the organization, being there from the start. If maybe you look at them and you go, all right, it's not a great organization right now. Nowhere close to winning, but I could put lipstick on the pig to try to make the pig a little bit more attractive. But at the end of the day, it's still a pig.
Yep, and he could also be thinking as well, look, like if I re-sign here, maybe it makes other players more likely to want to join me here in Anaheim.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. There's been a lot of star players that have gone to the Angels.
Yeah.
Right? Mike Trout has been there. We've seen, in years past, Albert Pujols,
yep,
go there.
Rendon,
even though he's really fallen out.
Yeah.
So they've been able to get star talent throughout the years, but the pitching. If you take Ohtani off that staff, I want to know what the numbers are on that staff, because outside of Ohtani, no one scares you there in that starting rotation.
And it's been a long time that they haven't had a guy besides Ohtani. I don't know what's been going on. I know their farm system hasn't necessarily been the greatest either. And that's probably, honestly, where the money needs to be spent. They've been spending it on free agents, but they probably need to rehaul their entire organization from the bottom up.
And that's all. It's crazy. I've been doing this show for 4 years. I did the weekend overnights for 2 years. So that's 6 years at CBS Sports Radio. All throughout those 6 years, because if it wasn't for Ohtani, then it was for Trout, make the postseason. It's always been the pitching with the Angels, and the pitching has never progressed.
None. And then it compounds the issues when your Rendons and your Pujols don't perform the way you thought they would. Because if you have those guys hitting 30 home runs and 100 RBIs, hitting 300 every year, okay, maybe you can get by just bludgeoning teams with your bats. But, like, they can't even do that because a lot of the guys they have signed, they haven't necessarily produced.
Let's hear Shohei Ohtani once again through his interpreter says he's not sure if he's opened the door for future two-way players.
I don't feel like I've opened the doors for them, but I was like one of the first ones to do it, so I wanted to be as successful as possible so the guys, like the younger guys that follow, will have an easier or better opportunity to do both ways.
So here's the compelling part about this. Going to Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes, ever since he's had this ridiculous success, every year during the draft, there is one player that people say, he's not Patrick Mahomes, but he could be like anywhere between 50 to 75% of Patrick Mahomes. And we've seen that, whether it was Zach Wilson, Jordan Love, every year, there Anthony Richardson, there's a player that gets the comp of he's not Patrick Mahomes, but if you're looking for someone like Patrick Mahomes, he could be somewhere close to Patrick Mahomes. I wonder with Major League Baseball, if that starts to happen, where everyone's going to try to go find the next Shohei Ohtani. But here's the difficult part of that. Yeah, when you're younger, you could be pitching, and then you could be mashing at the plate. But eventually, I feel like now in society, we tell the great pitchers, forget about the hitting.
Right.
And I know in college we see guys do both, clearly. I wonder, though, with Ohtani, if it does kind of have that Mahomes-like effect where now people try to find that next Ohtani, so then they start to instruct other people, all right, you could go be an elite pitcher. Oh, you're a really good hitter in high school? Now keep on doing it in the minors.
Yeah, and I actually wonder if there are guys who are maybe on the very lower levels who maybe – they at first thought, hey, we're going to make you only a pitcher or only a position player. They think, hey, you know what? Go get a bat and let's see what you still got there. I mean, think about it. Jacob DeGrom was a position player coming up when he got drafted. And, you know, he was converted into, like, a pitcher. Like, imagine if, like...
Prospects are so weird with Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
They really are.
Like, imagine if, like, DeGrom was, like, they said, no, we're going to let you pitch, but we're going to keep you as, like, I think he was a catcher. Like, I mean... Maybe he could have been the greatest player ever. Think about him as a pitcher.
Yeah, the only thing is, though, with Major League Baseball making the DH now full-time in the National League, is that are people going to be, even though with what Ohtani's done, and you've seen him be able to get in the field, get at the plate almost every day and then also pitch every fifth day, I wonder with taking, for the most part, the pitcher hitting, if that then really wires people to go, okay, you pick one or the other now.
Yeah, I mean, well, we're in a world now where everything's specialized. So, like, even kids growing up, like, we talk about two-way sports, you know, the first two-way sport was, you know, a Deion Sanders or Bo Jackson, you know, playing literally two different sports. Like, we don't have that anymore because kids, when they're 16 years old, 15 years old, 14, said, hey, you're only going to play basketball, you're only going to play football. So, like, that specialized mindset starts so young that, like, to reverse that now and say, okay, you know what, even though you play two positions, we're going to try to develop both. It just is so, like, against what we've been doing now for decades.
And look at someone like Kyler Murray, who was drafted, what, in the top 15, top 10 for baseball. We know he's the number one overall pick in football. And he got annoyed with all the questions about, do you pick baseball? Do you pick football? Do you pick baseball? Do you pick football? And at sometimes he's like, why can't I do both?
Right.
And ultimately he picked football. And they always threatened maybe him going back to baseball, but I don't think that will ever be the case. Let's hear from Trailblazers GM Joe Cronin, who says Lillard's situation isn't frustrating right now.
Frustrated? No, it's, I understand. I mean, I think that obviously is a place that he wants to be and that makes sense for him, you know, as far as the rest of the makeup of the team and all that. As a team, you always hope that, you know, you have more options. And to have limited options like that is, I wouldn't call it frustrating, but it prevents you from, you know, perhaps seeking out the best return. So, you know, it's something we'll have to work through.
And let's hear more from Joe Cronin. He says he understands why Dame wants out.
It wasn't necessarily intentional. It was just doing what's best for this team. And we kept doing that. And I could see why, you know, Dame would look at it and say, well, this isn't a win now opportunity as much as, or at least as much of a win now opportunity as some other places. So from that regard, I mean, I understand his position and I respect it. And it makes sense to me why he would look to go elsewhere.
And one more from the Blazers GM. He says the goal in trade negotiations is to maximize return.
In any deal, the goal is to come out with the best outcome. So for us, I mean, that can be many different things. We could weigh the, you know, it could be more of a win now player, and that would be intriguing to us. It could be a young player in picks, and that would be intriguing. It could be just picks, and we would look at that as well. For us, it's what can we, how can we maximize this return? And I don't think we have any set parameters. It's, we would evaluate each deal case by case and choose the best one.
EJ, the more and more I think about this, I do believe that inevitably Dame will wind up in Miami. So then you may say, how long are you actually going to wait? I kind of think by game one, though, he's still going to be on Portland. And this is going to drag out for a while. Where are you at on that?
I can't see that. I think with the Blazers, they have Scoot Henderson, who I know he only played, you know, half of a summer league game, but looked dynamite. And he's going to be your point guard. I mean, he's going to be the face of the team, the leader of the team at this point. I think to have that situation hovering around while you're trying to usher in a 19-year-old starting point guard might be too much for them. Like, maybe if this is a different player, different position, maybe I could see that. I think having Dame Lillard around by that point in time would be that would be a big distraction. I feel like they'll try to move him before then.
Don't get me wrong. It doesn't make sense to do so.
Right.
But in the NBA, a lot of things that don't make sense.
Don't make sense. It happened anyway, for sure.
And the Blazers, they want to do right by Dame, but they also have to do right by themselves, and that should be their number one priority. And you kind of look at it, I do think they'll find a way to get a deal done with Miami, but I would kind of challenge Dame, where we want to be respectful to you, but if Boston gives us a great package, or if Philly gives us a great package, why wouldn't he go there? Both those teams could win a championship with Damian Lillard.
Yeah, I mean, the Dame Lillard thing is bizarre because this is a guy who's been all about hustle, loyalty, respect, like John Cena almost. And like,
John Cena. You have, I wasn't expecting that reference right now.
I'm a wrestling fan.
I was a big You Can't See Me fan of John Cena as a kid.
But I really feel that's been like Dame Lillard's mantra. And now that he's going with this whole, oh, I'll sit out, I want to play there. Even though we're talking about sending him to really good teams, it seems so anti what Dame Lillard has been about. I don't know if this is just his agent doing all this because he knows this is the best way to get him to Miami and what Dame wants, but I wonder if they understand the damage that's being caused to his reputation by acting this way.
This was via, I believe I'm saying this name correctly, Danilo Acali on TikTok. Here is Justin Jefferson, who's one of my favorite interviews ever. He lists his top five quarterbacks, and he left one name out that some people are saying interesting.
I have to say number one, be Patrick Mahomes. Got to give it to him, the MVP. Number two, I have to say Aaron Rodgers. Got to give it to him. Number three, my guy, Joey B. His only respect. Number four, I have to pick Jalen Hurts. Got to respect his game and bringing Philly to the championship. And then number five, I have to say Josh Allen, Kirk O'Bain, you know what I'm saying? So that's my five.
I can't disagree with any of those five names, but people then are going to say, he didn't put his own quarterback in there? If you're one of those people saying that, there's no way. Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback. He's not great. There's no way you can make an argument that he's top five.
But do you think Kirk Cousins is happy that he didn't list him in his top five?
I don't think he cares.
I don't think he does either, but that's the thing. I don't know if it's so much the outside noise that matters. I think it more matters, like, did he actually PO his own quarterback? And
well, let me break some news here to Kirk Cousins. If it turns into a battle between Kirk Cousins and Justin Jefferson, Justin's going to win that one.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just going out on a limb. I know we got to get to David Hall, but one more. Here's Zion Williamson. And he said it was hard to diet when he was a younger player in the league.
Is it hard to diet at your age? Be honest.
If it's you, I'll be real. There are times when I will say, man, that's hard. It's hard, man. Like, 20, 22, got a lot of money. I feel like all the money in the world, man. It is hard, but I'm at that point now where because of certain things, putting back, like, the wisdom around me, a bunch of, like, I don't want to say older because they take offense to it. But, and I'm just putting people around me with wisdom, put me on game to certain things, and just go from there.
So that was courtesy of Gil's Arena. I guess that Gilbert's Arena's podcast. I know a lot of people are going to clown him for this, Zion Williamson. I remember Tom Brady used to say that if it wasn't for Willie McGinnis, he wouldn't have taken as great care as he's been taking care of with his body. And now look where it's turned into with TB12. But you're a young person. You get all this money. You're going out to all these clubs. You're getting all this great food. You're drinking all this alcohol. Even though you should be on the court playing a lot, he has been on the court a lot. So you're not really burning a lot of those calories. So it doesn't surprise me that Zion's in bad shape there.
And, you know, you're in the city of New Orleans, one of the best food cities in the world. So I'm not surprised by that. I thought it was interesting, though, that he prefaced it as to, like, that was something that he'd dealt with in the past. That's not something he's already dealing with. Even though we see him still struggling
with weight. His weight fluctuates.
Right, you know,
big
and,
time.
And like,
good
you
catch.
Know, yeah, you know, so I thought that was interesting. Like, he made it sound like this is something that was behind him when this was something that's been on the forefront. I mean, all those weird things happening on Twitter with, you know, said whatever woman he was dealing with kept mentioning that as one of his issues. Like, I thought it was weird how he couched it as something that was behind him. When most people who acknowledge his injuries and all the issues he's had, they feel like it's something he's still struggling with.
Well, maybe right now, because he does look like he's in better shape right now. Maybe he's just operating.
Right. He's up now 20 years old. That's like 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, good point. All right, we'll take a break. When we come on back, we'll connect with David Hall about all the latest at Northwestern. All righty, let's talk about the situation at Northwestern. We'll do so right now with a longtime radio and TV host in the Chicago area. You can listen to him weekdays on The Score in Chicago, Mullion Hall. And you can also check him out on NBC Sports Chicago. That, of course, is our pal in David Hall. David, appreciate the time. How are you?
Thanks, Zach. It's been quite a week. It's been stunning to follow what's going on at Northwestern. The last thing I think anybody who's been in Chicago for more than 5 minutes expected to cover was a hazing scandal at Northwestern.
Yeah, so yesterday, when it comes down that they're going to move on from Pat Fitzgerald, it's weird because what happened over the weekend, David, it wasn't stunning, but it was still in some way surprising just because a few years ago, this guy's getting talked about for NFL jobs. You know what he's meant not only as a player, as a coach, the university.
No doubt about it. Pat Fitzgerald didn't symbolize Northwestern football. Pat Fitzgerald was Northwestern football. Been there for 17 years. This would be the last guy in the Big Ten, one of the last guys in America that you would have expected to be presiding over a hazing scandal. And yet, there were 11 players that corroborated the claims of a whistleblower who was a backup player on the 2022 Northwestern team who came forward at the end of the last season and made some claims that were very specific in nature, and it revealed cracks in the foundation, and it revealed a practice that was very odd, bizarre, sexualized hazing. And the details are disturbing, Zach, and they were outlined in the report. So what happened was the way it was handled raised a lot of questions and doubt that didn't need to exist by Northwestern, the university, and the president's office. The bottom line is they ultimately did what I think a lot of people knew they needed to do. You can't tolerate hazing in 2023. It's not a rite of passage where everybody is boys will be boys and wink, wink, nod, nod. This is a different era. It's a different climate. They did the right thing, but the way it was handled, I think, raised more questions about the leadership at Northwestern and made you wonder, if Pat Fitzgerald will be the only person losing his job as a result of this investigation.
Yeah, that's what I said earlier, David Haw, who's with us on CBS Sports Radio. It seems with the initial two-week suspension that they tried to sweep this under the rug, and then when student journalists got the truth out there to the public, it wasn't any new information to the university. It was just that they were exposed, and then they realized, okay, we have to get rid of the coach, but that doesn't leave everyone off the hook that was involved in that decision-making process. They should lose their job now, too.
They certainly need to take a good, hard look, and the Board of Trustees needs to ask some real tough questions, because the president, Michael Schill, looked at the same set of circumstances and evidence on Friday and concluded and announced that Pat Fitzgerald would serve a two-week suspension. 24 hours later, the Daily Northwestern aired or published a story that it included explosive details about the allegations and about the nature of the hazing. And that was when, at 11 o'clock on Saturday night, when most people are not checking their Twitter feed, that Michael Schill said, I'm going to reconsider and reassess the discipline. He reacted and buckled to public pressure. Now, even though he made the right decision, the way he got there raises doubts about his leadership. Derek Gragg was on vacation, the athletic director. He told the players what was happening via Zoom in 5 minutes without taking questions. There are a lot of serious questions that need to be addressed by the administration at Northwestern. Oh, by the way, Zach, on Monday also, in the midst of this, 670 The Score, where I am employed on the Mullion Haw Show, reported that the baseball coach is overseeing and dealing with his own mess because he has a toxic culture he's created. So this is something very unbecoming of any athletic department and something, frankly, you just don't expect to see at a place like Northwestern.
And it's crazy to me that in the year of 2023, where especially when you're on a college campus and how many people now have outlets to get information out there, how they thought that they could just kind of sweep this under the rug. And it's almost like an arrogance and them just being really stupid, which I could say that's surprising, but we've seen that before in college athletics.
We've seen it before. There's a hubris involved, I think, that's part of it. I also think that there's an expectation that this is not to get too deep into the weeds and to make a long story short, Northwestern football is not covered in Chicago in this market the way that it used to be. There are a lot of reasons for that. I used to work at the Chicago Tribune, the Chicago Sun-Times. They used to have writers assigned to covering Northwestern sports. They no longer do full-time. The Daily Northwestern is as much of a check and balance as you're going to get. In that climate, in that culture, you're going to find things that slip through the cracks. And maybe, just maybe, the president of Northwestern saw that as an opportunity to have a Friday news dump, announce a two-week suspension, and think that people might say, well, okay, that's Northwestern. We'll pay attention to them when they're making a run for the Big Ten championship. Until then, we'll take their word for it. They were wrong. The student journalists did their job. They're the only people in this saga that have really done their jobs in an exemplary way.
Wrap it up with David Haw. How much does it matter what Pat Fitzgerald actually knew? Because I said the other day, David, if he did know, clearly he should lose his job. But if he didn't know, then I would still say he has to lose his job as well, because these coaches, they know almost everything that goes on in their program.
Zach, I've been a longtime supporter of Pat Fitzgerald, and I always believed in the fact that when he said everything starts and ends with the head coach, you believe him, because he was that kind of head coach. Every detail was in his control. So you're right. Either he didn't know, and that was a fireable offense, because he should have known. Because when somebody invites the kind of scrutiny that kind of statement invites, everything that happens begins and ends with me at a program, then it's the scrutiny that he deserves. And so what happens with that is that the accountability comes with that. And Northwestern, at the end of the day, held Pat Fitzgerald accountable in the way that he asked them and everyone to do. He lost his job. He was fired. I believe it was the right move, even though it wasn't handled in a way that I would call professional.
If he wasn't the football program, would he have just been fired from the start?
I believe that's a great question, and I think you're right. I think that maybe some of these allegations were so disturbing and heinous that if you're talking about a guy who was from the Mid-American Conference, who took a leap up to coach of the Big Ten in his third season, he'd have been gone yesterday. Pat Fitzgerald was probably given the benefit of the doubt because he is the guy that was and defined in the Northwestern football, and the reason they're building an $800 million stadium at Ryan Field, and the reason they have a $260 million facility on the lakefront. He was the reason they believed in the possibility of Northwestern football, and that he was given every chance to prove that, you know, that was justifiable faith. But that's why this makes us stunning and a little bit sad.
So where does Northwestern go from here? I saw today that they're going to retain their assistant coaches. You know, do they try to go bring someone in, or is this more so you just got to wait till November or December?
I can't understand the assistant coaches move. I mean, these guys were complicit in all of this. They were in that culture. They did not police that locker room. That really surprises me. I can't wait to attack that in the morning. But I'll tell you what, they need somebody that represents integrity, has some gravitas. I don't know who would be interested. It will be a difficult job because of the cleanup project. I don't know who's making the decision to hire the next coach. I mentioned the name this morning on the Mullane Haw Show of David Shaw, somebody from Stanford who has been through it before. I do think that, number one, you need somebody with experience. Number two, you're probably not going to get somebody that looks at this as a great opportunity to leap. Maybe it's not like if Fitz were going to the NFL and the job was open. This is something that's going to maintain and require a lot of patience and perseverance. So it's got to be the right guy. And I don't have much faith in the Northwestern administration to get it right. I think they have to get those questions answered before they're able to look ahead and see what's best for the football program.
When do you think we'll get clarity on everybody else? Like, we just talked about the assistant coaches, but like what we were talking about earlier, David Haw, that they thought they could cover this up, then Student Journalists did their job and exposed the university. There's got to be other people to pay here.
I would think so, and I just don't know how exhaustive they want this to be. If they're retaining the assistant coaches, it kind of says to me they're holding Pat Fitzgerald solely responsible for the culture that was created, which I think is short-sighted, and they have a blind spot. So Derek Gregg is finally back from his European vacation, so he'll spend enough time to maybe dig into this, and I can't wait to hear from them. This is remarkable. Northwestern, at a place that takes pride in its journalism school, that understands how perception affects reality, has yet to have a press conference addressing this in front of a camera, a microphone, and reporters. That's not accountability. That's tone deaf. Once they do that, I'll have a better sense of where this is headed.
Last thing I'll ask you here, when it comes to the Northwestern situation, do you think you guys will get Pat Fitzgerald on this week? Do you think he'll do an on-camera or behind-the-mic interview?
I do not, Zach. I think the other big headline from this was a statement that Fitz released last night. He has retained a very high-powered Chicago lawyer. He is going to challenge his dismissal. I think this will be about what the size of the settlement will be. He signed through 2030. But, again, he's going to challenge the fact that it was a two-week suspension that was mutually agreed upon. And then because of public pressure, the president changed gears and fired him, you know, 48 hours later based on the same set of circumstances. So because there will be litigation, I don't think that he will be as public as he might be had he been fired for cause ordinarily. Right now, in the midst of a lawsuit with that pending, I think that Fitz will probably maintain a low profile and just be somebody who is going to be out of work for a while, uncharacteristically, but I just don't think he's going to be very vocal either, because his legal advice, smart legal advice, will be to lay low.
Last thing, now just shifting gears to the Chicago Bears just real quickly while we have you on. 3-14 last year, they had the number one overall pick. They trade it. You end up getting DJ Moore and a King's ransom for it. Going in now for a big year for this Bears regime and Justin Fields, where's the confidence at of Bears fans entering this season?
Well, the confidence is sky high. Chicago believes in Justin Fields. I don't know that it has been earned, but there's a rush to want to anoint him the next great thing in the NFL. I think he's got a lot of work to do. He's got to be more accurate. He's got to be more in time. You know, he may be the best running back in the NFC North, but he's got to be better, more polished as a passer. That will dictate how good their offense functions. They've got big holes on the defensive line, which I don't think they've answered. So I don't know that I'm one of those guys that sees them making a big playoff push. I think they may flirt with respectability and possibly, you know, 7 to 8 wins, but I don't see this as a season that they get over the top necessarily. This is, you know, the no excuses tour, as we've termed it. in Chicago for Justin Fields. He's got an opportunity to be great. He's got superstar potential, but he's got to do the little things better and make the simple throws more consistently before I'm ready to deem him, you know, a superstar in the making. He's got great tools. I hope he fulfills that potential, because if he does in Chicago, he will be king here for a while.
You guys need a quarterback. That goes without saying. Every year, hey, what are the Bears going to be doing at quarterback? And they never get an answer that ends up delivering. David Haw does a great job. Mullion Haw on the legendary 670 The Score in Chicago. David, appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Zach. Anytime.
All righty. Let's take a timeout. We'll react to the whole situation at Northwest on the other side. All righty. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. It's so funny when you hear one of those older rejoins and you know that that was during the pandemic when we were broadcasting from home. Because it sounds, even though the equipment has improved significantly from even when the pandemic first happened, in terms of, like, if I go do a show at home, the piece of equipment they give me now is totally different than what they gave me a few years ago. But it sounds there, and I wasn't, that I'm on speakerphone just yelling in like a closet, which I was actually in a basement just yelling. But looking back at those times, EJ, it's, even though it wasn't funny, it's kind of funny, because I was sitting in my house in shorts, sometimes just boxers.
You used to do shows in boxers, really?
Friday nights.
Oh my!
We're not on camera anywhere.
That's funny.
After we did the first 2 hours, I would take off the shorts and just go in my boxers, and I'd always have a shirt on. And I'd just be doing the show down in the basement.
See, that's crazy. Like when I do the podcast at home for the Odyssey podcast I do with the Knicks, like. I in theory, like, I am on camera, but, like, I'm, you know, chest up. I mean, in theory, I could not wear pants.
Yeah, but you're on camera, so you never know what could happen during that.
Yeah, you don't know if the camera falls down or if you get up, maybe you want to fix something.
Do you have any pets?
I do. I have a dog, Lita.
So if a dog, like, just runs into the room and you try to get the dog out while you're doing the podcast and you stand up there and
you gotta make sure she's out before I start.
In your orange and blue boxers, that'd be a little bit awkward.
Yeah, exactly. So I like, to me, I also feel like I'd be too comfortable. Like, I think to me, like, I think, you know, shout out to Colin Cowher. I think he said something that, like, he doesn't tweet unless he's wearing pants, because, like, he's like, otherwise I feel like I might tweet something a little too comfortable, a little too whatever. Like, I took that, and I've always, like, thought about that. I'm like, you know what? Yeah, if I'm ever recording anything, I want to make sure I'm clothed. I don't have to be wearing, you know, a suit or, like, something nice, but, you know, shorts and a shirt.
It would only be on Fridays. It would only be on Fridays, and here's why. Because when the pandemic first happened, on Fridays, my friends and I would, like, all get on Zoom on Friday night. We'd be playing music. We'd be drinking, you know, doing other things. And I was just, you know, from the chest up on camera, I was like, for some reason, I just said, why not take the shorts off, be enjoyable? Because I knew eventually I wasn't going to make it up to my room, and I was eventually going to just pass out on the couch or something like that.
I mean, Godspeed. Like, I'm not even tripping. I get it. I wish I had that level of confidence and comfortability to feel like I can, you know, do a show in boxers.
Well, that's why I give credit actually to Hickey, even though I think the shower no cap videos are cringeworthy at times. He is naked while he's in the shower, and he's only shooting from his very weird chest hair up, where it's very all over the place and patchy with his chest hair. But if there's a reflection, or if you think you're only shooting chest up and, I don't know, somehow something else gets shown, that takes some guts. See, that's to put that out there.
It is. And what scares me about that, too, because now people are so, these hackers are so next level.
Yeah.
My thing is, maybe what I recorded was good, but me just having my camera, you know, maybe while you're getting set up, whatever, maybe, you know, you moved your phone the wrong way and then something's showing. I wouldn't want that to somehow get out, because hackers decide, I found this guy naked. I'm going to post it on the internet. And then I found out it's me getting ready for my no cap video.
Like, don't be wrong. I'm confident with what I'm working with. But I don't want the whole world to see what I'm working with.
Right, of course.
And that's the thing with Hickey. I said to him when he actually was putting out these videos, I go, weird question. I know you're showering, but are you actually naked? Or when you're recording these videos, do you have a bathing suit on? And he looked at me. He goes, are you serious? He goes, of course I'm naked. He goes, I'm taking a shower. And I go, I thought you were, you know, maybe just in swim trunks or something like that.
Hickey's one of a kind.
See, Hickey, it's weird because I call him Hot Take Hickey, as you know.
Yeah.
So then he thinks that the listener thinks that he's intentionally trying to put out these hot takes. Hickey's just always wrong. Hickey is the most genuine person I've ever met. He doesn't believe in the shtick of radio and all that stuff. And that's what makes Hickey so good, I guess you could say, is because he's just intentionally a moron. Unintentionally.
Okay.
If you get what I'm saying. Like, he's not trying to be wrong. He just happens to be wrong a lot. So that's why I thought it was funny when he was appalled when I asked him that. He goes, what do you think? This is just a shtick of me in the shower. I go, kind of. It's called shower no cap. He goes, of course I'm naked in the shower. So I give it up to him because it takes a lot of confidence to film yourself if you're naked, even if you're not shooting your entire body.
Yeah, it's again, he's one of a kind.
Probably not the best topic to discuss and then go into this Northwestern situation, if we're being honest. But my takeaway from the David Haw situation, because sometimes when you do a national show, you hear things, but you don't hear everything. And then you bring on a local guy, well-respected like David Haw, and then he'll say, this is out there, but this is wrong. Or this is being said, but this is what really happened. And my interpretation of the events yesterday are just confirmed basically what David Haw said was on Friday, they go out there, they give a two-week suspension, news dump, right? No one's going to talk about it. Summer Friday. And then student journalists, which, the way that Northwestern is covered from a football standpoint reminds me of like how Temple was covered when I was at the university. And, the reason why I was able to make such a big impact in college in the school of media communication is because even though the Philadelphia Inquirer covered them, it wasn't the way that the Inquirer would cover the other bigger teams. So I had an opportunity to create relationships and then report and talk about what I was seeing, and I had great access. So when you're on a college campus and you know a lot of these students, students talk. Like, I would get news information about a player that was kicked off the team before anyone else would, because I knew the guys, not only on the team, they wouldn't tell me that information, but it was people associated with the program. Where now I could say this, like, who cares? Like, there were guys that were students that were working for the team that they see things and they want to gossip. They want to tell you because they're in the know. So when it gets to this situation, you have players talking to current, former, whatever, talking to the student journalists. And then the student journalists put out what the school knew happened but thought they could get away with it. And then it was, oh my goodness gracious, look at the public reaction. Even though we just tried to sweep this under the rug, it got exposed. And it wasn't like it got exposed 3 years later where maybe it's like old news and people don't care. It got exposed a few days after your punishment, like a day after your punishment. So it's not as if that information from the student journalist was shocking to the people that were involved in giving Pat Fitzgerald a two-week suspension. They all knew what happened. But it was the public reaction. I don't want to say the public reaction got him fired, but it was the university trying to hide the facts. And then once the facts were exposed, they got caught looking like a bunch of idiots. And then they had to fire him, which he deserved to lose his job. But just because Pat Fitzgerald loses his job doesn't mean that's it. Everyone that was a part of this decision-making process deserves to lose their job now because they tried to cover it up. And the cover-up here is ridiculous. And that's why I asked David that, EJ. If he wasn't the football program as a legendary player and then right. What he's done as a coach, would this have been different? I think it would have. If this would have been a guy that was just there for 3 years and they were like a good program, I know they've been bad recently, but they were just a good program, but not great, I think the guy would have been out immediately.
Yeah.
But it's because they didn't know how to handle a legend who, I don't know what he actually knew, but either you knew and you did nothing, you're a disgrace, or you didn't know. And then what control do you have over your program? And how can you look a recruit's parents in the eyes and say, I'm going to guarantee that your kid's going to come here for 4 years at Northwestern, get a great education, right, play football, and I'm going to look after him, and I'm going to look after his safety and well-being. How can you guarantee that? So this whole thing, I know there will be a group of people that go, oh, boys will be boys. This is just part of growing up. What? Like, if that's true, that since a player messed up in practice, a young player, that they're going to bring him into the locker room and they're going to dry hump him. What does that teach someone? And I'm not saying there aren't lessons to be learned when you mess up as a young athlete, but there's certain ways to go about it. What that was that was allegedly happening is the farthest thing from how that should have been handled. So that's kind of my reaction to the entire thing. Pat Fitzgerald should be out of a job. but a lot of other people at Northwestern should be out of a job as well. That is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We will get into the latest about DeAndre Hopkins next, and coming up at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, we will chat with Chris Dillon, who is the co-director of Goliath, which is the new docuseries that's coming out soon about Wilt Chamberlain.